And we morph into the next part of my program, something spiritual. And it's my pleasure to welcome Jan Bucknell. Hello, Jan. Welcome along.
Hello, Bill.
A little bit closer. A little bit closer.
Very happy to be here.
And great to see you because your big news at Unity of Melbourne, you know, with your name, Bucknell, because we're celebrating 50 years of Unity.
Because my father wrote a book.
That's right. He wrote a book, and it's a great book too, great history. And here we are 50 years on. Now tell us, you've got a special guest for us today. Would you like to introduce him?
Yes, well, I'm very, very happy to welcome and introduce James Steinberg. And he is part of the spiritual community that I've been part of now for over 30 years, and he's been part of it, I think, for over 40 years. Is that right? Since
that's right, yeah.
1973. He's been a devotee of Adidas Samraj, and James has made an in-depth study of many of the world's great spiritual traditions, guided by Adidas Samraj, to be very embracing but also very discriminating. But I would just say personally, I just love James' talk. He's really my favorite speaker in our whole community. He speaks with such intelligence but also with such heart and inspiration. And not just myself, many, many people just love his talk. So we're just delighted he's here in Australia and very happy that and grateful to you that we could be on your program.
Well, welcome along, James.
Thanks.
How long have you been in town?
Just about 3 days.
3 days.
And I'm loving it.
Okay.
It's great.
Right, now, look, I know about your group from way back, because I remember a gentleman, and we used to call him Bubba Free John, is that
right?
That's
right, that's
right. Why all the name changes?
Every time he would go through some major change in spiritual orientation and consciousness, he would say it warranted a new name.
Well, that's a bit like Saul and Paul, isn't it? As you go along, you change your name and someone adds something to it.
That's right.
And a name is very symbolic and very important.
Yeah, so Adidas is the
name now,
was his final name. He began as Franklin Jones.
That's right. That's in the book I've got at home. Yes.
Yes.
I love that first book. And I really did, in preparation for today, I found a book I've had for ages called The Eating Gorilla, and it comes in peace. And he goes into everything here, diet, herbs.
We were tickled that you found it. It's a wonderful book on the whole matter of health and regenerative diet.
And something I've been mad about, the earth is a school.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
And, okay, people want peace, but we're all little baby gods all trying to learn. Right. And so, therefore, we have to be patient with the people that are up and coming, and those that are up there have to be patient with us. Not up there, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
How did you get started with the group?
I was looking for something that was spiritual. Mm-hmm. I was looking for some answer to questions I had. Mm-hmm. And at the time when I was doing it, it was the U.S. in the 60s and early 70s, there were spiritual teachers everywhere.
Mm.
I discovered Adidas' biography, The Knee of Listening, and it seemed like it made sense to me. But he was, when I saw the picture of Adidas, he was wearing sunglasses. His hair was swept back. And he just looked too cool, kind of too hip to be a spiritual master. I mean, I expected a spiritual teacher was going to be wearing some sort of robe and be some official person and definitely in their 60s or 70s. And so it took me a while to really pick up the book and be serious about it.
Well, how old was he then, do you think?
He was 33 or so.
And you were?
21.
About my age, too. So we're all on that path together in different parts of the world. Isn't it funny what we select as we go along? It's amazing what we're drawn to. Okay. And from that...
the next book that I came across was called The Method of the Siddhas. It's now called My Bright Word, and it was talks.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a talk in there called Money, Food, and Sex. And I realized when I read that talk that here was a man that would be able to really serve my spiritual practice because I wanted to know what should I do with all these areas. What kind of diet should I eat? What should I do with my relationship and sexuality? How should I live that? How do you live it in a way that's spiritual? And when I found the master that had that kind of wisdom, that was important to me.
And to talk about sex and spirituality in those days wasn't really the topic, was it? It was a sort of a back thing. No one came forward with sexuality and spirituality.
It was a taboo. A spiritual person was supposed to be an ascetic or otherworldly.
Yeah.
And not a strong, embodied person in life. And so I was looking for a teacher who could explain how you could all have both of those together and have a life that was full of all that, because I wasn't about to be a celibate.
That's true at 21.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, look, with what you're out here for, you're on a spiritual path, and with the spiritual path, sometimes the word guru comes in. What's the difference between a guru and a mentor?
Well, they're all kind. Guru is, of course, an Indian word. Four-letter word, I like to humorously say, a four-letter word, yes, to guru, in the West, certainly. But in some sense, you could say your mother's your first guru and your father's your next guru. But when you come to a spiritual guru, then the difference between a spiritual guru and a mentor is someone who's teaching you not just about ordinary things, but teaching you about the spiritual reality. And the greatest gurus are those who not only taught about it, but also could transmit or bless with the same power. With the spirituality. They didn't just have an experience in the past, but they're presently in that place where that can be felt in their company.
And at 21, how did you feel about sort of signing up for a guru experience?
In order to have a guru, you have to first really trust that person. And so a lot of checking out. And I was naturally brought up to be suspicious and to really wonder. And before I was going to put my name on any kind of dotted line, I'm going to be your student. And so I really checked out Franklin Jones. When I first met him, he was Franklin Jones. And I really checked that out. I read his teaching very thoroughly. And I always said to myself, as soon as I find someone genuine who has some answers, I'm going to join and really be serious about it. And as soon as I got to that point, there was a lot of reluctance there, because I knew that to make that commitment was extremely difficult. And would mean a whole different change for the rest of my life. Now, but even after I became his student, I continued to check him out all the time. And very ordinary ways. I was raised to make sure that someone was good with men and women, and was good with blacks, whites, Maoris, whatever, aboriginals, that they didn't have any discrimination, that they wouldn't they'd be fair with money, that you wouldn't have a guru who was like taking his hand in the pot or anything like that. And so I checked all of that out, and in every way I found Adida to have incredible integrity, so I could relax.
When you were young, what was the one of the challenges, but maybe the first challenge that you had to overcome in spiritual life under this particular method?
Well, when I actually, after I signed up, I said to myself, what have I gotten myself into? Because Adida requires a very disciplined life. He required you to live a healthy diet. He required to have your sexuality within a relationship, exercise every day, meditation every day. So full range of disciplines that were required, and it was a lot for me to swallow. So just the demands of all that was a big thing for me when I had finally become a student, which I didn't expect.
Was that your first introduction to meditation?
Well, I had tried lots of different teachers. I worked, when I joined the community, I had worked in a spiritual bookstore.
And wow, so a smuggler's board, a feast.
Exactly, exactly. And so I checked out a whole bunch of different things. And, you know, try them all. I went on intensives and this and that and retreats and all of that. But really the first person I ever made that kind of commitment to was Adida. And when he wasn't less than I imagined, he was more than I ever hoped for. And my understanding of who he was grew over time. I really didn't understand how wonderful a teacher I had stumbled across until the years went on.
Why a spiritual path?
For me?
For anyone.
Well, there was a dissatisfaction in me.
Yes, young. In everyone, isn't there?
Yeah.
A soul urge or something, would you say?
Yeah, there was a feeling that there must be more.
Yeah.
That there had to be something else than what I was seeing. And, you know, I came from a pretty middle-class family. I wasn't in want for food. We weren't rich or anything, but we had what we needed. And I was intelligent and all of that, so I didn't have a problem, good parents and all that. But I said, there must be something more. There's got. Why are we here? I remember as a child, one point, I was maybe 10 or 11, walking across the room and to turn on the light switch. And before I got to the light switch, I was just asking, what's the purpose? Why are we here? What's this all about? And so you could say began a kind of a spiritual quest.
I'm trying to make this as simple as possible for our listeners who are tuned in and probably haven't heard too much of this. Spirituality, it's a part of my life now, but it really, when we realize that there are more things around us that we can't possibly think of. Like this body is just the body, but we are actually spiritual beings. Yeah. Could you explain a bit about that?
Well, I think everyone gets for free a moment of feeling that they're more than what they look like, that they exist in a kind of a, you could call it the shock of God, an intuition.
Mm.
Now, the great saints are those who, when they have that intuition, they never forget it. They devote their whole life to it. But I think all of us kind of, in special moments, know that there's more. That there's Arida used to tell our children, you're more than what you look like. You know, you're more than just your body. You're more than just your mind. That there is a spiritual reality. However people would describe it differently. Now, some people might feel that when they go off into the mountains and nature. And some people might feel that when they listen to an incredible piece of music, they feel lifted up.
No.
Some people feel that in relationships or in sexuality, or an orgasm, they may feel some special kind of release, some spiritual sign. Some people go into a great cathedral and they feel some tingle or something special, those moments. And for myself and for many, it's, well, how can I be in that place all the time or more often? How can that become what my life is about? And I think those were the ones on the spiritual quest.
So what do you think our life is about?
I think ultimately our life is about enjoying and participating in this spiritual reality.
Mm-hmm. Now?
Every moment, yes. A moment-to-moment process. Arida describes it pretty simply with an expression. Now, we're talking on the radio, so people can't see this, but I'm going to describe what I'm doing. He said there's either the open hand, and he used to hold his hand up, or the closed fist. And he said the spiritual way is this openness, to be remain open. And he said the contraction, or the self-contraction, is what the ego does in its suffering and its difficulty. And so in the simplest way, the way he's teaching is how to remain in that open disposition, that free and heartfelt disposition.
Now, the ego, is that a good word or a bad word?
Well, it's used in, it's good to have a good, strong self-assurance about yourself, and that's a positive thing to have. But ultimately, this ego itself, when done in a reflexive way as a contraction, is absolutely must be overcome in order to experience the spiritual reality.
Well, Jan, your father, of course, was in unity, and your mother were, and we look at the Bible metaphysically. So therefore, when we read about Jesus coming down from the mountain, that high place, riding on a donkey, we interpret that as he had overcome his animal side, the animal nature, but he still had, he controlled his ego. The ego didn't control him. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about here with you?
Yeah, simple way, absolutely.
The same ego.
Yeah,
but we, as you say, we need it, but we have to control it.
You have to transcend it. Ultimately.
Transcend it.
Transcend it is a word, a good word to describe. It's not a matter of killing it, so you don't know who you are, but it's a matter of transcending it. And only when you're out of the way can you receive this spirit.
A lot of groups now are using words like oneness and living in the now. That's interesting, a trend which I've just noticed over the last few years, that more and more people, not necessarily in spiritual groups or anything, but in real life, are starting to become more aware of who they are on a personal level, regardless of religion or whatever. We all have basic human needs and rights. Is that a good start?
Absolutely. Absolutely a good start. You know, I brought a book to give you here called Not to His Peace. And this is Arida's book on spirituality as it relates to human interactions and creating a peaceful world. He was very concerned, and you know, he's no longer with us. He died in 2008, but in the last few years of his life, he was very concerned about the state of the world and what was happening in terms of conflict and so forth. And the word, the expression that he, one of the principal expressions of that book is prior unity, which I thought was interesting in
prior
terms of the
unity
church.
Yes,
he
yes.
talked about the prior unity, which prior doesn't mean before, but means the inherent unity. The unity that's there just inherently as us. And when we transcend our own ego or separate self, we realize the unity of all of us.
That we're all one expression of the divine.
We're all one, as you said.
When a person comes to any of your teachings, what are some of the first things you try and impart?
Well, we ask them to study Arida's books.
What's the first one you'd study?
For me, I like it's a book I know you're familiar with, The Nihilistic, is Spiritual Autobiography.
Yes.
Because I find it such an incredible description when he describes his own coming to his own self-awakening, reawakening. That's an incredible description of all that. So that's usually what I'd recommend. But we want people to really understand that he teaches the most extraordinary spiritual way, but understand what it is. Adida teaches what he calls the real thing. He calls it a happy way, but it's also a hard school. In other words, you really have to grow and outgrow everything. If you want to be happy, everything that's less than happy, you need to outgrow that. You need to be able to let that go.
And is there a place, is there individual instruction here for that?
Yes, and there's a community in Melbourne here.
Yeah.
And I was called this summer, and they said, would you like to come over and do a little seminar and have a retreat? And so this Saturday, we're going to, at the Theosophical Society in the city, on Russell Street, we're going to have a seminar and talk about Adida.
What time is that?
What does it begin?
I think it's 11 to 4:30.
And the Theosophical Society is in Russell Street, isn't it?
It's right.
Their bookstore, yes.
That should fall off my lips, the amount of books I've bought.
It's between Collins and Burke Street.
Yes.
Yeah. 126 Russell. Yeah. Yeah. And we have a little website, what is it? Adidam Australia. Mm-hmm. Adida, A-D-I-D-A, is our teacher's name. And the way itself is Adidam. You know, the path of the way of Adi is A-D-I-D-A-M. So it's Adidam Australia is the website.
Okay, at the Theosophical Society of all places, I'm sure that many listeners, we've shared this with different guests we've had in, we've all been in there. It's been our saviour since I was in my 20s. Mm. I've still got the first book on yoga I bought there when I was, I think I was about 19.
Right.
Now, with the disciplines involved, there's meditation. What about prayer? Does that come into it?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a prayer. There's a special practice we have, which, you know, I was looking a little bit of some of the literature on the Unity Church yesterday, and I saw that we do a thing called the Prayer of Changes, and that prayer is intention coming together. Mm-hmm. We do one every weekend for world peace. And we have a different prayer that we all do together, all around the world, everyone who's in our community. But for any issue where we need to invoke the spirit or the divine, we get together and do this prayer of changes.
And how big are you around the world?
There's a couple thousand very serious devotees. Mm. And there's many, many more who know and practice to one degree or another. And then there's communities, you know, in different countries. So we have a strong community in the United States, in various cities, and in Europe, and Australia, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And Adida, at the end of his life, we acquired a property, and he lived in Fiji.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an island in Fiji that's our spiritual headquarters.
Well, what interests me is that the power of prayer and meditation, and if it's starting to be used, it goes around the world, and collectively differences can be made.
Absolutely. We feel that a small group very intensely and focusedly praying can have much larger effect than it seems that you would think by those numbers.
Now, I don't want to get too negative, but, you know, the world seems to be in a bit of a mess. What do you think's going on? Is it just we're about to change and realize who we really are and we have to learn it the hard way, unfortunately, or what?
The state of the world is extremely difficult, as you say, and it's really hard to know whether it's just about to go on a big change or. And Adida, the reason he wrote this book, not to his piece, is because he felt that a change was necessary. And if the change didn't happen, that we were on a really rocky road.
Well, our destiny is to be the spiritual person we are, isn't it? So whatever it takes, I suppose, we've agreed to come on this journey.
Yeah.
But not many people consciously seem to have realized this. But thank goodness more and more people are waking up.
Yeah. Adida speaks of a process in this book called Everybody All at Once. And everybody all at once is, if everybody all at once will come to that waking up time, that the power is with the people. That the power, no one can stand up against that power if everybody all at once comes to an understanding that change has to occur.
Yeah.
And so this is a blueprint for that to come forward.
This book looks great. It's called The Ordinary, under the main title, Not to Its Peace, is The Ordinary People's Way of Global Cooperative Order. What a good start.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you think about it, how are we going to get this change? We've got meditation. In some of the teachings, we realize that we are the power, but we have to be the power in action.
Absolutely.
And we've got to, I believe for myself, I have to make sure I'm doing everything in harmony with universal spiritual law. Would that be a term you could use, universal spiritual law, in your group?
Absolutely.
Is there any other name for it that you apply to that, to God or to whatever they call that power?
Aryeh talks about reality, truth, the real condition.
Does he talk about God as the word God, or does he use other...
He uses it and distinguishes God and how it can be used. He talks about an acausal God, a God that's not the one that's directly sitting back and causing all sorts of changes, but the God that is all in all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important word for him to be very clear, because there's so many crazy and wild understandings of God.
Mm. As we're finding out.
Yes.
All right, it's 27 minutes past two, and James, you brought some music in. Why don't we just regroup? Now, you've given me a piano track. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. One of Aryeh's daughters is an excellent pianist and composer. And Aryeh, at the last few number of years of his life, was an artist. And he made the most beautiful image art. And so that art was used as a backdrop. And there's a group in Florence, Italy, that put on a performance not to his piece, with the art from, and Aryeh's art.
That's beautiful.
And she composed this piano piece for that production. So it was premiered, and she played it in Florence, and this is a CD of that. Thank you.
Beautiful music there.
Yeah, so you were just asking about that cover. On the cover there is one of Adida's beautiful image art pieces. And then that's Namlila, his daughter, playing the music. And the Florence Dance Company is doing their interpretation of the whole theme of Not To His Peace. They're doing their interpretation of that in a dance. They've been very moved by Adida's teaching, and they've been doing many performances now with using his art and his spiritual writings as their theme, their backdrop for their work, their inspiration.
Okay, now, Jan, you got all excited when we mentioned a word earlier. Positive disillusionment?
Well, I was just responding to what you were saying about the potentially dreadful state of the world, and I've always been very moved by what Adida, when he used that term, meaning that, yes, one could be very disillusioned about the state of the world, even about the limitations of one's self, but that it isn't about then becoming cynical or losing faith or losing heart, that then that can lead to a deeper resort or awareness of the divine that, as James was saying, is always already the case. And so I just felt that that is his brilliant and heart-opening answer to the state that one may look around at the world. And James had something else to say when he talked about dual sensitivity that Adida had also talked about.
Those who get really serious about spiritual life have kind of come to a dead end on a lot of things, kind of realize that the world's in a difficult place, that they themselves aren't really finding the ultimate happiness that they seek. And so there is a kind of a disillusionment about where we are and what's happening. And if that's all there was, then that would be a very bad message. I mean, that would be a very suicidal, morbid, difficult message. But the positive disillusionment is there is more than that. There is a spirituality. There is something that can be realized instead. It's is great and wonderful, and that's really all of our intuitions. We all have an intuition of what it's like to know and feel and act and be completely happy. We all have that intuition. But somehow, sometimes to get there, you need to be disillusioned about ordinary life.
Oh, that's true. Sometimes, you know, when we're talking with friends, we talk about the state of the world, and when we develop spiritually, I feel, we're opened up to a lot of things like the negativity and the positivity. But because we know and we've had our own inner experiences, it's my job then to keep above it, to keep the positive side instead of dwelling on the negative side. And that term you used, I'll be using that somewhere in one of my talks. Thank you very much. Is it copyright? I think it is, isn't it?
I'll just say this is a term from Adida's teaching.
Right, okay. I will mention that if I use it. Yeah. Now, you're an author in your own right, James.
Yes.
And I've got a book here, Divine Distraction, which is where we got the title, A Guide to the Guru-Devotee Relationship.
Right.
Now, it sounds, I get visions here of Mother Superiors and nuns being given 1,000 Hail Marys.
Sure.
Go with that one. How would you?
Well, Adida asked me to write this book because we all in the West now have a very anti-authority orientation.
Yeah.
I mean, really, anybody who's an authority, we want to buck up against that. And the guru-devotee relationship has been given a really bad name. That's why I jokingly say it's a four-letter word.
Yeah, and it's become an advertising term now. The guru of such and such on Madison Avenue, the advertising guru, you know.
And I looked at when you look it up in the dictionary, it says often used derisively, the term guru. You know, like they're making some fun of something. They call them the fitness guru or something.
Yeah,
kind of making.
We had the food. We actually had the food yogi in the other day.
Right. Okay.
So it's all become commercial. And
so my experience with Adida now has been 40 years, has been absolutely positive. So I wanted to write a book to talk about the happy and wonderful tradition when a guru is actually effective and real and wonderful. The excitement that it is to have a true teacher, and the need really to have someone who, I mean, I was looking for someone who had answers and could help me. And I found nothing but integrity with Adida, and as someone who not only as a teacher but had the ability to communicate or bless or transmit that spiritual reality.
What are some of the disciplines?
The disciplines
things we're talking about, all this sort of business. Yes, were there disciplines? Which, of course, there were. But how? What? What? were they, and how do you think they were applied?
The basis for every discipline that Adidas taught was, how do you live that area of your life and have it increase spirituality, have it increase this connection with the divine, have it increase the connection with the spirit? In other words, what kind of food would you eat that would kill that feeling of the spirit? Because you're weighted down by toxins and chemicals and foods that are hard to digest. How would you live a relationship with sexuality where you're so promiscuous and all over the place that there's no attention left for spirituality? Mm. So each of the disciplines, really, the focus or the purpose of them is not for the sake of discipline. I mean, who likes discipline from that perspective? But when you become committed to a spiritual life, and that's important to you, and you want more of that, and that's happy, that's ecstatic, that's just great that you're feeling the spirit, well, then how do you live your diet? Mm. What do you do about sex?
So I suppose it's a bit like similar to what I've been going through. We're not punished by the law. We're punished by the misuse of it.
Yeah, I think we've all had some pretty bad experiences.
Yes.
If you've grown up in some of the conventions. And most of the people who came to Adidas were like that. Mm. Most of them were like, you know, I came to Adidas because I didn't like what was happening in this particular conventional thing that I was in. But you could see from the eating gorilla that his approach is very free, very open, and, you know, what is out there? What things are out there that can improve my health and my diet?
And interesting, with all the food programs and cookbooks, it's a big step forward. When was this book published?
That was done in the 70s.
Eating Gorilla, yeah.
And there's been new books published since that point. Adidas, increasingly as the years went on, started to stress the importance of eating a lot of raw foods. And he came up with a term called the minimum optimum, is that everyone should do what's most important for what you need, what your own body needs, and everybody's a little different. But as a general rule for everyone, you should eat as raw and fresh food as possible, and minimum optimum of cooked foods and hard to digest foods.
And that's becoming a little bit more mainstream now, would you say, Jan?
Yes.
And we go on.
Yes.
And have you been applying it? You're a vegetarian, are you?
Yes, I have been applying it over a number of years. I think we're all open in different ways. That's a particular area that I felt very open to Adidas. And in responding to that, I felt what he said. It's really about relationship with him. It's not just a discipline or a diet. It's literally opening up to a deeper reception of his spiritual blessings and love. That's what I've actually experienced. It makes it much more interesting than just a health food book.
Well, it seems to me most of my friends from my young years, we were all interested in things, but we all came across herbs. I remember frantically getting all these herbs, you know, when I was younger. I just loved them.
Right.
But that's all I've done with them. I think my next step is to learn how to use them properly.
Sure. This book...
just reinvented the whole thing with me, because it's been something on the back burner for too long. Absolutely. The different properties of herbs and really how they work, and which was quite an interesting thing about them.
Well, it's a wonderful process for a realizer, a spiritual being who has realized truth, to take the time to really explore all these wonderful areas. He's written a book on exercise. He's written a book on diet. He's done a book on sexuality. And this guru-devotee relationship has been important, because we all have such difficulty to accepting anybody else's help or authority, and we buck against it. The first thing that is important in the guru-devotee relationship is to understand the principle. And the principle of the guru-devotee relationship is very similar to a principle I think you would have knowledge of from unity background, is you become what you put your attention on.
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever you meditate on, whatever you're giving your attention to,
we create our own reality by our thinking.
Exactly.
No wonder St. Paul said, was it to change your life, change your thinking?
That's right.
That's a real big universal law, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so that's the principle of the guru-devotee relationship. In other words, if the best thing you can do, if what you want to do is to put your attention on the divine or the spirit or the truth, how do you do that? And if you can find somebody who you feel embodies that, and is you recognize that person as one who truly embodies that, and you can trust that, then by contemplating or being in relationship with that one, you're in relationship to that divine spirit. And that's the guru devotee relationship has been there for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. You can see we named this seminar the Ancient Walkabout Way. And in all those years, when before history, when men were walking about, scientists tell us now everyone started from Africa and drifted off. One of the first groups, the earliest group to come off, were the group that came here to Australia, the Aborigines. Mm-hmm. That's what is said. In those days, before any books were around, before there was even perhaps any language, there were spiritual teachers who you would see and feel something and then stick around that one.
One of the advantages of a guru or a spiritual teacher is that sometimes people become unbalanced when they get involved in these sort of practices. Right. And they hear voices and they think, oh, look, that was God speaking to me. And you can tell they're very unbalanced by some of the things they say, and they can mislead people. So I think the guru and teacher relationships is vital there.
Absolutely.
Have you seen much of that happen, the unbalanced state?
Absolutely. If people involved in spirituality, well, the rules are not very easily defined in that. Mm. And it's very easy to go to the left or to the right. A guru is completely useful and necessary. When you actually get to a place where you are positively disillusioned, when you actually are really seriously looking for some truth, then you're going to accept help where you can find it. Mm-hmm. Before that, it's kind of just, we can talk about it as much as we want, but it's just an idea. Mm-hmm. When you actually, in your life, get to a point where you read the Spirit's extremely important to you, it's urgent for you to live a life based on that, then to find a guru is extremely important, even necessary for you. Mm-hmm. And then you really have to test that individual. And when you find a true one, it's like finding a gem. It's the greatest treasure you could find, is to find a genuine teacher. When I first found Adi Da, it wasn't important to me his status in relationship to anybody else or anything else. What was important to me was he a genuine teacher? Could I trust him? Mm-hmm. And could I get some help from him, guidance, as you're saying, to stay balanced on the spiritual way, to know what to do?
Yeah. With the mainstream media picking up on more spiritual topics, we've had The Secret. Did you see that, the DVD of The Secret?
Yes.
And that introduced a lot of people to the power of the mind. But I don't know whether it really balanced it with, okay, the mind works in a certain way, but unless you're aligned with harmony and universal law, you can bring in anything, but it may not be what you want, and it could be your undoing. Because we think we know what we want, but our soul, as Jesus said, eventually, not my will, but thy will be done, we get to a point where we have to surrender and just think, look, I've got all this stuff, but it's weighing me down. Where do I go from here?
Yeah.
You've heard that story before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a lot of things these days. We have a lot of objects, and we have a lot of things that should make us happy. Mm. But to define that the true help and that true guidance is very difficult. And so this is where, Adi Da, you'll see he describes himself as Avatar, which is a very strange word for most.
I love it.
There was the movie Avatar, but he doesn't really mean it in that sense, you know. But Avatar,
how would you mean it?
He means it in the sense of somebody who came to help others. Mm. The word actually, it's a Sanskrit word. Mm-hmm. It means to cross down. Mm-hmm. It means someone who came to help others. And Adi Da, his name itself, the Da, Adi Da, means giver. It's a traditional word that means to give. To say Da means to give. You'll find it in the Hindu text, the Upanishads, as a giver.
And you'd know all about that because you were his librarian and researcher.
I was.
Did you research any of this, these other books?
I did. I made the bibliography for this book.
I must look at that. That's
for the Eating Gorilla. Yeah. But it was an extensive one. We only did a short one in here. There's an extensive one that was so big we didn't put it in the book because we consulted many things. Mm. But Adi Da created this list, which I've worked with for many years, called the Basket of Tolerance. It's 18,000 items. It's an annotated book list that has books, videos, and CDs, all arranged according to spiritual principles.
Wow.
And that's in that consideration, I just thought I wanted to mention this to you. He has a very thorough consideration of the literature of the Unity Church, and many items from the Unity Church appear on that list.
Mm.
And many new thought teachers. Yes.
Like
and
Divine Science, Science of Mind.
Exactly. That's that. Those books, mm-hmm. The Science of Mind is absolutely on that list.
Yes.
And he recommends that his devotees, those who are his students, study the literature and come through all of that. Come through that understanding, but with discrimination.
Mm. Well, even Charles Fillmore, the founder, said, I reserve the right to change my mind.
Oh, cool. Sure.
And we have to remind some people of that sometimes.
Sure.
Look, you've given us something interesting here. Now, I'm going to start at 20 seconds. Would you introduce it to us? What?
Sure.
Our next, okay, what, 20 seconds. Here we go.
Adidar wrote a book called What to Remember to Be Happy. It's a children's book, but it embodies all the principles of his teaching. And this little clip is being read by a child. I think he's 8 or 9. Jonas Strauss is his name. And he is reading What to Remember to Be Happy, which is Adidas' book for all of us, but for the children.
Nobody, not mom or dad or grandmother or grandfather or big sister or big brother or teachers or doctors or soldiers or reverends or athletes or lawyers or TV stars or any people who are working or any people who are playing, not even the president, not even a king or a queen, not even people who love each other know what a single thing is. It is a great and wonderful mystery to all of us that anything is or that we are. And whether somebody says, I don't know how anything came to be, or God made everything, they are simply pointing to the feeling of the mystery of how everything is, but nobody knows what it really is or how it came to be. As long as we go on feeling this mystery, we feel free and full and happy, and we feel and act free and full and happy to others. This is the secret of being happy, from the time you are small until the time you are old. If you will remember every day to feel the mystery, and if you will remember to feel that you are more than what you look like, and if you will remember to be the mystery itself, then you will be happy. Every day. And all kinds of wonderful happenings will come up for you. You will feel happy, and you will always help and love others, even those who are having trouble feeling happy and are even trying to make you forget the mystery. Someday you may meet someone who has felt the mystery really strong for a long time, so that person feels the mystery all the time and is always happy. Such a person is the best person to learn from about happiness and life and love. I hope you will remember to feel the mystery every day as long as you are awake forever. The best thing to tell anybody is to remember to feel this. I have been doing this for a long time, and it is the best and most important feeling of all. I am very happy I could tell you this. Maybe someday we will meet face to face. Maybe. Anyway, at least you and I will always know that at least one other person somewhere is remembering and feeling and loving the mystery right now.
I think we just have silence after that.
Yeah.
What more can you say?
Yeah.
And how old was that? Young guy.
I think he was 8 or 9, maybe even a little younger.
And that was coming from his own consciousness.
He was, that particular cut we just heard became such a phenomenon that he's about 40 years old now. And they have invited him back to play the cut and then to talk about what it was like as a child and, you know, his own understanding of all those principles and what his life has been like since then.
Is the Sunday school still like that these days with your group? You have many children?
We have a wonderful teaching on how to raise children and to begin to help them to feel the spirit and the mystery. When they're very young, they go on retreats. They're capable of so much. I have two daughters who were raised in Adidas teachings, and it was such a blessing for them.
Right. Well, we're listening to James Steinberg and Jan Bucknell from, now, let me get it right, Adidam. Okay.
Adidam.
See, if I do it a few more times, I'll get it. Adidam. Now, okay, time is running out. But we'll have time to let people know a bit more towards the end where you're around. You've given us something very interesting here. Would you like to talk about that for a second?
Sure. Adida himself was a Lutheran when he was a child. And he went to Lutheran seminary. And then he finally went to Russian Orthodox seminary, where there was more spirituality. And then he became a spiritual teacher altogether. And one of the things that he's done with many traditional texts throughout the world is to look at those texts, many of which are translated. He knew Koine Greek and had a background from having been in Lutheran seminary. And so he went to the New Testament and did his own rendition. He took many different translations, but he wanted to do his own. And he said, as a spiritual teacher, he said, I wanted to bring out some of the spirituality about Jesus of Nazareth. Or actually, he calls him sometimes Jesus of Galilee at the end, because he said that's actually more where he was really from when you look at some of the texts. And he talked about Jesus of Galilee and his real spiritual import, in which he said, if you really boil down to the esotericism, he said, Jesus was a spirit baptizer. He baptized people in the spirit. And the story that Adida likes to speak about in the New Testament is when Nicodemus comes by night. And he said what the ritual was to actually bathe him in the spirit baptism, that it was a literal spiritual transmission. He said it's become more exoteric in the sense, more ordinary in the sense of just moral principles and all of that, which is all good. But he said the essence of it truly was this esoteric spiritual baptism in the spirit. So this is a little bit of him reading his own rendition of the New Testament.
Chapter 25. The original and principal tradition of John the water baptizer and Jesus the spirit baptizer is an esoteric, spiritual, and mystical tradition of divine communion. John the water baptizer was, in fact, the spiritual master and spirit baptizer of Jesus of Galilee. Thus, and by means of the spiritual baptism given to him by John the water baptizer, Jesus of Galilee experienced the absorptive, mystical, and spiritual developments of divine sainthood. And in due course, Jesus also became a spirit baptizer or spiritual master. Within the inner or esoteric circle of his spiritually initiated devotees, Jesus of Galilee taught the ancient and always continuing esoteric way of spiritual devotion to the spirit-baptizing master and the esoteric method of bodily communion with the divine spirit breath and the process of inward spiritual ascent to the divine domain, or the unitary divine state beyond the visibility of all the visibles, via mystically interiorized perception of the cosmically ascended divine morning star. After the death and esoterically presumed spiritual ascent of Jesus of Galilee, his inner circle of spiritually initiated devotees continued to promote and grow the mystical tradition of their spirit-based school. But because of the difficult circumstances of their time, the original esoteric sect had to become more and more secretive. Indeed, eventually, the esoteric sect associated with John the Water Baptizer and Jesus the Spirit Baptizer disappeared from the view of history under the pressure of the exoteric, or conventionally and merely socially and politically oriented, rather than spiritually and mystically oriented, sects that developed around the otherwise developing legends and myths of the lifetime public teaching and healing activities of Jesus of Galilee. The original esoteric school of the spiritual initiates of Jesus of Galilee was associated with practices of spiritually invocatory prayer and inwardly absorptive mystical ascent. They especially sought divine absorption via the internally perceptible white five-pointed star within and above the body and the mind. And especially after the death of Jesus of Galilee, and in accordance with esoteric instructions communicated by Jesus during his lifetime, the inwardly perceptible white five-pointed star was interpreted to be the true ascended body of Jesus himself. And over time, the spiritual practitioners within the esoteric school, begun by John the Water Baptizer and Jesus the Spirit Baptizer.
I could listen to the whole lot of that.
Yes.
That voice.
It's wonderful.
What it transmits.
Absolutely.
Isn't it fantastic?
Absolutely. We wanted people to be able to hear Adida's voice because it is really a voice of profundity and truth and the divine spirit.
I've had to work in two consciousnesses here.
Okay.
The other one would just let it drift on for the rest of the afternoon, and we wouldn't have Max, who's waiting in the wings after 3 o'clock. Anyway, look, I'd love you to thank you very much, both of you, for coming in, James Steinberg, and also Jan Bucknell, who's always very close to our heart, is Jan. She's in our thoughts all the time. Now, just tell people what's happening with the group, would you?
Oh, okay, so I've come into town to so that we can, actually, tomorrow night we're going to have a small evening affair at our house on Mount Albert Road in Surrey Hill, and that's going to be at 7:30 tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Saturday we're going to take a day, as we mentioned, at the Theosophical Center in the city. And really go into more depth about Adida.
How do we contact you, Jan? Is there,
the phone number is 1-800-234-326.
Okay. 1-800-234-326. All right, that's it. And if people want to know any more, they'll have to contact you.
Great.
Thank you, James and Jan.
Thank you, Bill, very much for having us.